much for the invitation and the introduction. So I'm going to, basically my talk is going to focus on a recent result that I got together with Miguel Navasquez, Yelena Gurianova, and Matthew Hoban. But on the way to prove this, to show this result, I will pass by some of the research interests in my groups. In particular, I will mention the characterization of quantum correlations, and I will also mention something about a device-independent quantum key distribution. So at the end, I will tell you about almost quantum correlations, but to get into almost quantum correlations, I will give an overview somehow about the research interests, some of the research interests that we explore in my group in Barcelona. This is like, let's start by the, in giving some motivation for my talk. Well, I think everybody agrees that when you do science or in any scientific discipline, what you try to understand is to understand the correlation that you observe in the system. So if you, I do an action here, how this is going to affect what is going to happen in another position and give another instant of time. If you want to model this without, in a very minimalistic fashion, you can do it using these boxes. So you will see that all my talk is going to be about boxes. And so what you have here, you have a, you put a classical label that you use to specify an action that you will perform on this box. So for people working in quantum non-locality, what you get here is a system. And on this quantum system, you can perform different quantum measurements. And you label the quantum measurements by x. Okay, so x1 for the first box, xi for the ith box, and xn for the nth box. So, I mean, you can see this as getting a box, for instance, by a provider. And in this box, you have different buttons, and you can press all these different buttons, and you label this choice of the button by the symbol x. And then as a result of this action, the box gives you an output, a1, aith, ai, an. Okay? And you can have n possible actions that you can perform in your box, and you can get r possible results. So again, this you can see as making a measurement on my, say, quantum particle and getting a result. And here, I don't want to make any assumption, and this is why I'm working on this device-independent scenario, about the how the box manages to produce this output given the input. So this is why the whole description of my setup is going to be given by the observed correlation. So by correlation, I will mean the conditional probability distribution of getting outputs A1 for the first box, A2, AI, AN, when I measured or when I use as an input X1 up to XN. Okay, so these are numbers that I can easily estimate if I have access to these boxes, and for which, I mean, to estimate these numbers, I don't have to say anything about the internal working of my devices. I just keep pressing buttons and getting outputs from my boxes. Okay, so during my talk also, I'm going to assume that there is no communication among these. So I will assume that the process of generating the output given the input will depend only on the input and possibly some initial preparation of these boxes. So it could be that these boxes were prepared by a provider. So this is why they display some correlations. But there is no communication among boxes. Once, so at the moment that I decide the input and I get the output, there is no communication among these devices. So, well, if you are in a, you, I mean, I think there are many ways of enforcing this requirement, but if you are completely paranoid, but you still believe in special relativity, you can do this by synchronize the measurements, but synchronize the input-output process so that they define space-like separated events. Then special relativity guarantees you that there is no signal that can travel from one box to the other. So this is also some, okay, this is sometimes also called the box war scenario. So formally, what I will describe everything again by these observed statistics. And this is nothing but I can put all these conditional probability distribution into a single vector. And this is a vector of, I mean, the size of this vector will depend on the number of parties, number of inputs, and number of outputs. So this is a, I mean, you can compute the size of this vector. All the entries in this vector are positive because they correspond to probabilities. And you have to satisfy some normalization condition. So you fix the inputs. The probabilities of all the outputs, the sum of the probabilities of all the outputs has to be 1. Okay, and you have this for all possible combination of the inputs. Again, I make no assumption or modeling on the devices. Okay, they are seen as black boxes that process classical information. As such, the scenario seems boring, but the scenario is not boring at all because we impose physical constraints on these boxes. So these boxes cannot be arbitrary, but they have to be compatible with some physical constraints. So the first minimal requirement, if you believe in special relativity and say you enforce things so that they define space like separated events, you know that these boxes cannot be used to exchange communication because otherwise this would mean that you are sending information faster than light. And this simply implies that the marginal probability distribution, if you sum over the result of a subset of the boxes, what the remaining boxes sees cannot depend on the inputs that were used in the other boxes. Okay, so these are the non-signaling correlations, the non-signaling constraints. So if I sum over the outputs of, say, the k plus 1 up to m observers here, what remains does not depend on the inputs that these observers use. Okay? Because if this was the case, these observers, by choosing different inputs, they could affect the marginal probability distribution seen by the other parties, and this could be used to signal. So in the standard bipartite scenario, this means that the marginal probability distribution seen by one party does not depend on what the other party does. I guess this is clear to everybody. Okay. But of course, this is very innocent a priori, but of course it gives some non-trivial structure to this vector of probabilities. So I have to satisfy all these linear constraints. Okay, so this is the first constraint. The second, there is another set of correlations or conditional probability distribution that is well justified, which is classical correlations. So here what I'm thinking is that I have this vector of numbers, and then I'm thinking about a preparation of these correlations by means of classical instructions. So I'm thinking that these devices were prepared by a provider, and this provider wrote some classical instructions on the devices, and the devices produced the input, the output, given the input and the classical instructions. Okay, so this is like in the devices, there is a classical computer that gets the input, computes a function, and produces the output. Well, you can see that you can restrict your study to deterministic functions, and then this means that since you don't have access to the program, or you don't have a specification of the program that specifies the output given the input, you may have to sum over different programs. And then all the correlations that you can observe in this scenario have this form. This is nothing but the standard Einstein, Podolsky, Rosen, local hidden variable correlations. Leaving aside foundational issues, I think the operational meaning is clear. So again, these are the correlations that you get when you write classical instructions on a piece of paper, and this piece of paper was put inside the box, and the box gets the input, reads the instructions, and produces the output. But of course, we also know, because we work on quantum theory, that there is something beyond these classical correlations, and these are quantum correlations. So what are quantum correlations? These are the correlations that can be written as measurements acting on the quantum state. So here, I'm not specifying the Hilbert space, but I know that something is quantum whenever I can find a quantum state and a measurement operator for the first box, and a measurement operator for the second box, and so on and so on, up to the nth box. And the probabilities can be written as the Born rule predicts for quantum correlations. Okay, so I would say that some correlations are quantum whenever I can write them in this form. So everything is expressed in terms of Hilbert spaces here. So what we know about these sets of correlations is that they are they define convex sets. And we also know that they satisfy these inclusions. So the set of classical correlation is a subset of the set of quantum correlations, which in turn is a subset of the set of non-signaling correlations. So this result was proven by Bell. Okay, so as I say, the set of classical correlations corresponds to the set of EPR correlations. And this is a convex set, so you should think that here you have a convex set. And these hyperplanes are what are known as Bell inequalities. And we know that quantum correlations violate the Bell inequalities. So there is a region of violation of a region of quantum correlations that do not belong to the classical set. Okay, so these are the so-called non-local quantum correlations. So in general, for many of the hyperplanes that determine the set of classical correlations, there is a quantum bubble, a quantum region, a region of quantum violation. Okay. Well, later, actually, it can be found in some papers by Thielson, but it was Popescu and Roderick who made this violation explicit. We also know that there are some non-signaling correlations, that do not have a quantum realization. Okay, so Popescu-Lorlec introduced something that is known as the Popescu-Lorlec box. So there are some points here, some correlations that cannot, I mean, I can give you some numbers here that satisfy normalization, they are positive, they satisfy the non-signaling constraints, but for which I cannot find quantum state and measurements that satisfy this relation. Okay, this is why I have these supraquantum correlations here. Okay, so there are correlations that cannot be obtained by performing local measurements on a quantum state. And I have this strict inclusion. Okay, so all what I'm going to say is going to be about this correlation, about this set of correlations. So the first question I want to consider is, what do we know about this region here? So in principle, we believe that the correlations in nature are described by quantum physics, or this is what we see nowadays. So whenever we make experiments, we see quantum correlations in nature. So let's try to characterize this region here. I mean, this problem is not easy because contrary to the set of classical and non-signaling correlations, quantum correlations is a convex set. You see here it's convex, but it's not what is called a polytope. So it's somehow rounded, okay? So it's not easy to characterize this. So if you give me some correlations, I want to know when they have a quantum realization. Okay, so this is what I say I define as the problem of characterizing quantum correlations. So this is a problem. It's a very simple decision problem. I give you some numbers that are defined as scenario where you have m parties making m measurement or m inputs and getting the outputs. So this is a vector of positive numbers satisfying these non-signaling constraints. And now I want to know whether they are quantum. So they can be obtained using quantum correlations. As an example, I mean, this is the one of the simplest formulation of the problem. So imagine you have two parties. They can make two measurements. So the measurement, there are two measurements for Alice, 0 and 1, and two measurements for Bob, 0 and 1. You see here, I have these are the measurements, okay? So it's 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1. And as a result of each combination of measurements, they can get four possible results. So this is probability of getting 0, 0, probability of getting 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1. Okay? And I chose these numbers here. So imagine you have an experimental group. I mean, you are leading an experimental group. And there is a PhD student who comes to you and says, well, I made an experiment. I prepared two particles. I made two measurements. I get four results. And the statistics I observed was the one here. Of course, experimental group, you are going to have error bars. But let's assume that the student comes with these numbers. So what do you do with the student? You fire him? You keep him? I mean, is this something that makes sense? I mean, apparently, why not? Okay, so is this something quantum? So what are the motivations for that? Well, I mean, if you care about quantum mechanics, well, I think it's an interesting question to understand what are the correlations that you can get by measuring quantum state. If you let me to be more speculative, I mean, are we ready to see physics beyond quantum physics? Okay, so are there ways of proving that things are not quantum. So if you understand the limits for correlations coming from quantum constraints, you can construct the analog of Bell inequalities and have quantum Bell inequalities. Okay, so this is what I said. And another motivation that why we are interested in this problem is that understanding the size of quantum correlation can tell you how these correlations can be useful for information tasks. So here I will make a small parenthesis, and I will tell you about what Rob mentioned, this device-independent approach for quantum information processing. So again, I focus on correlations. I came into the problem of characterizing quantum correlations. And now I'm telling you how to use these correlations for information processing. So for that, I will tell you about hacking. Okay? So perhaps you're aware that some years ago, people that are actually working in Waterloo, I think, I mean, Vadim Makarov, and co-workers, what they did, they bought commercial quantum cryptography products, and they hacked them. Okay, and this was a surprise at that time because, I mean, people in the community, they were saying, like, these are unconditionally secure, unbreakable security. So how did they manage to hack quantum cryptography? I mean, there is a security proof telling you that quantum cryptography is secure. So how did they manage to break these protocols? Well, what you have to understand is that what quantum hackers did, they didn't break the principle, but they broke the implementation. So what do you have? In quantum cryptography, you have the following. You have the theory. So the theory, if you take the standard protocol for cryptography, say BBT4, tells you you have to prepare systems that are live in a Hilbert space of dimension 2. You have to prepare these states that live in this Hilbert space. And you have to make these measurements. And if you do these things, then you can establish a secret key, and you can use this for cryptography. Very nice. I mean, there is a mathematical proof that tells you that the scheme is secure. But now when you go to the implementation, I mean, I don't know of any experimentalist that can certify that he has prepared objects living in a Hilbert space of dimension 2. I don't know even how you can certify that a quantum particle lives in a Hilbert space of dimension 2. Actually, I mean, what you do in general is you don't prepare single photons, say, encoded in polarization, which can be a good approximation to Hilbert space of dimension 2. But what you use to prepare state is an attenuated laser source. And of course, this is a very complex object that does not live in a Hilbert space of dimension 2. And the measurement is a single photon detector, which is also a complicated measurement. And this is precisely why these hackers could hack the protocol, okay? Because what you have at the implementation is not, does not match what you have, what your theory requires for the security proof. And it's, the hackers exploited this mismatch between theory requirements for the security proof and what you do in the lab. And I mean, this is, I would say, unavoidable in general, okay? So if you have a standard cryptographic protocol, you make assumptions about Hilbert spaces, and I think it's very difficult to certify that these assumptions are met in your experimental realization. So a solution for that is device-independent quantum key distribution. So rather than make that using modeling of your devices to prove security, you should see your devices as black boxes that get classical information and give you classical information. So now you see that in this language, I make a connection with all my previous discussion about correlations. So if you want to make protocols whose security does not depend on your modeling of your device, you should prove the security only from the things that you can estimate without modeling the devices. And the objects that you can estimate without modeling the devices are the correlations. Okay? So the idea of device-independent quantum key distribution is make protocols based on correlations and only on correlations. Don't assume that you are here, you have to measure qubits, q-trees, continuous variables, nothing. This is just a black box that gets classical information and produces classical information. And try to design techniques to prove security in this regime. Well, if you think about this scenario, what you realize is the only way of getting security is by having a violation of Abelian inequality. So the only way for you to get security in this scenario is by these correlations being non-local. Because if the correlations are non-local, and you don't want to make any assumption about the devices, they cannot have been prepared by a provider using classical instructions. Okay? Because if the, on the other hand, if the correlations are local, there is a classical explanation for your data. And in principle, it might happen that the provider has prepared your correlation using this classical explanation. And classical information can be cloned and can be predicted. OK, so this is why understanding quantum correlations is useful also for quantum information processing. Okay? So if you want to do device-independent quantum key distribution, or in general, device-independent quantum information processing, you want to make a quantum information theory with black boxes, you have to understand what are the correlations that you may expect among quantum objects. Okay, so this was a sort of parenthesis on my motivations. So I have, but now let's go back to the problem of characterizing quantum correlations. Okay, so I remind you again, this is the problem and this is the example. Well, I mean, some years ago we derived something that is, well, I feel somehow ashamed of using my name to name this hierarchy, but this is how it's known nowadays, okay? So this is the Navas-Quest Pironio Athene hierarchy. So it's a method to solve this problem. So you give me these points, like the previous object I gave you before, and now you ask me whether this is quantum. Well, we introduce some methods that are organized in a hierarchical way. So I take these numbers here, and I run a test that where you have to check the positivity of a matrix. And now what we prove is that if this matrix is not positive, you know that the points, the correlations are not quantum. If the matrix is positive, then I give you a second step. This step is computationally more demanding than the previous one, but it's also stronger. So if you don't pass the test, then they are not quantum. If you pass the test, I give you a third step. Okay, and so on and so on. You run this hierarchy. The nice thing is that all the steps here can be computed using semi-definite programming. So they can be efficiently computed on a classical computer. And also, the nice thing is that we prove that a hierarchy is asymptotically convergent. So if you have quantum correlations, you will satisfy all steps in the hierarchy. If you have non-quantum correlations, at some point, you will detect that they are not quantum. Okay, so here you have a technique to solve this problem. Actually, at the moment, to my knowledge, this is the best technique that we have. Okay, so there might be better techniques, I don't know, but at present are unknown. So the general technique that tells you when some correlations are quantum, the best that we have now is this hierarchy of conditions. So if you want a geometrical representation of that, so here's the set of quantum correlations. If you give me a point, you want to know whether these correlations belong to this set or not. And what the hierarchy does, it gives better and better approximations to the set of quantum correlations. So now what you do is to see, you see if some correlations belong to this set. If they don't belong to this set, clearly they don't belong to quantum correlations. If they belong to the set, you don't know, so you run the next step and the next step and the next step. So again, we can prove convergence, but this is only proven asymptotically. I mean, heuristically, we see that a few steps in the hierarchy give you a good approximation to quantum correlations. But I mean, this is only heuristic. And actually, there are even indications that for some cases, you may have to run the hierarchy until the infinite step. OK, so now if you use this hierarchy and you take the numbers I gave you, you can prove that these points are not quantum. So if the student comes to you and shows you these points, well, there are two possibilities. He has made a very strong mistake, or quantum mechanics is wrong. So you will be disproving quantum mechanics as Bell inequalities did for classical physics. And this, I think this doesn't satisfy already the first step in the hierarchy. OK, so all what I told you was about this part of the region, how to characterize this set. But of course, there is also a second part here, which is the set of non-signaling correlations that do not have a quantum realization. So Popescu and Rodlik, when they realized that there exists this non-signaling correlation that do not have a quantum realization, they wonder why we don't see these correlations in nature. Okay? So this is the question. And now I would say the answer that we have at the moment is, well, they don't exist because they are incompatible with quantum laws, which is an answer that might be satisfactory for many of you. But if you think operationally, this simply means that there is no there are no objects in a Hilbert space that combine together with the Born rule give you the correlations that you expect here. Okay, so perhaps this is not entirely satisfactory, and you would like to see other reasons why these correlations are not possible in nature, maybe more operational reasons. And then, I mean, in recent years there has been a sort of boom about reasons, people proposing reasons to understand why this region of correlations is not possible in nature. So I think one of the most convincing reasons was first presented by Wim van Damme in his thesis. So he considered the problem of communication complexity. So what is communication complexity? There is Alice, who has some data represented by a vector of bits x, and Bob, who has another vector of bits y, and they have to compute a function that depends on these symbols. So let's see. Let's imagine that I have to meet Rob. We have to organize a meeting. We have to schedule a meeting, and I have my agenda of a given size, and he has his agenda, and we have to agree about when to meet. So you understand that if we have to find agreement. We have to exchange some communication to find an available date in our agendas. So the principle of non-trivial communication complexity says that the amount of communication that we have to exchange to solve this function scales with the size of these vectors. Okay, so you don't expect that if our agendas have many are very busy, let's say, you expect that we'll have to exchange more communication if our agendas are not busy at all. Okay. Well, what Van Damme showed in his thesis is that with some supraquantum correlations, communication complexity would become trivial. So for us, I mean, we could simply exchange a given finite amount of communication, and that would be enough to solve problems independently of the size of these vectors. I mean, with these information principles, everything is very subjective. I mean, to me, this seems a very strong reason to believe that some correlations are not possible in nature. I believe that in our world, I mean, communication complexity cannot be trivial. But perhaps this for you is not a convincing reason, okay? But to me, it's a convincing reason, and I think it's a nice principle. Okay, so Van Damme proposed that the possible explanation of why some supraquantum correlations are not possible in nature is because we believe that nature, in nature, communication complexity is non-trivial. This was later studied by some people. So for instance, if you take the previous pictorial representation and you consider what is called the CHSH inequality, I mean, in this paper, Brassard and co-workers, they proved that using this communication complexity, non-triviality of communication complexity, all the correlations that are in this part are incompatible with this principle. So if you believe in a world in that nature has non-trivial communication complexity, these correlations are not possible in your theory of nature. But there was a gap. I mean, they were not able to prove that you can go down up to the region of quantum violation. Okay, very good. Then there was another principle, information causality. This came later by Pavlovsky and co-workers. So I will tell you about this principle. Again, it's something quite intuitive. So imagine now in this scenario, it's also a communication task. So I get two bits from a referee. And now the referee is going to ask Rob about one of my two bits. He doesn't know which one. And I'm allowed to send Rob one bit. Okay? So you can see that Rob, you can expect that Rob will guess one of my bits with certainty. So because, I mean, classically, the best I can do, if I get two bits, I can send one to Rob. If Rob is lucky to be asked about this bit, he will guess correctly. Otherwise, he will have to make a random guess. So information causality imposes that this happens whatever the correlations that we share. Okay. Again, it seems intuitive that if I get n bits, but I'm allowed to send m bits, I mean, he will be able to guess m of my n bits. Okay. Well, it happens that some non-signaling correlations violate this principle. Again, this is you may be ready to live in a world where information causality is violated. To me, it seems like a reasonable principle, and I'm happy with this, but this is, again, something that you may like or not. The nice thing is that in this case, using information causality, they were able to show that in the case of CHSH, you get the same bound as quantum mechanics. Okay, so if you remember the figure that I showed, using information causality, you can get down up to there. You don't get all the quantum region, but you get this point there. So it was the first time that an information principle was able to get down up to this point here. And this is why the paper was published in Nature, I would say, because the principle looks natural, and they were able to single out at least this point of the quantum region. Okay, well then, there was another principle. Now I'm going to be faster. So there is another principle that was proposed by Navasquez and Wunderlich that is called macroscopic locality. So in this scenario, where they define some sort of macroscopic limit of correlations. And they impose that in this macroscopic limit, there are no non-local correlations. Okay? I mean, in our macroscopic world, we don't see any violation of Bell inequalities. So you expect that if you combine quantum events and you try to make a macroscopic limit of these events, you shouldn't see non-locality. Well, if you're interested, I can give you more details. But then using this, the nice thing is also they got the same violation of this Bell inequality. So they got this point of quantum violation. But they also proved that the principle is larger than the quantum set. So it's not enough. I mean, it was bad for them. And they proposed a principle, but they could prove that the principle was not enough to get quantum correlations. And then, I mean, I'm going to skip this. We also have our principle, which is local orthogonality. And it's also has some nice properties, but it doesn't seem to give quantum correlations. Well, okay. I mean, the question now is, where is all this going? Okay, so will this ever stop, this search for principles producing quantum correlations? So what's the problem with this research program, I would say? Well, on the one hand, I mean, quantum correlations are defined by Hilbert spaces. And it seems very difficult to get Hilbert spaces only from principles that you state in terms of correlations. So these are just frequencies. You go to the lab, you make measurements that you label with X, and you get output that you label with A. You count frequencies, and you state principles based on these correlations. So it's not so easy to get Hilbert spaces out of these numbers. But on the other hand, I mean, proposing principles is quite easy. And then it's very difficult to prove that they don't give quantum correlations, because you have to exclude that any possible use of this principle is or is not in contradiction with quantum physics. So information causality, the way they got the quantum violation of CHSH, was by combining the boxes in a very obscure manner. So you have to consider all possible uses of your principle to see whether it gives or it doesn't give quantum correlations. So you have these problems. So again, to prove that the principle works is difficult, but to prove that the principle doesn't work also seems difficult. Well, I mean, recently we have proven that this research program has to face an important problem, okay? Because we have identified something that we call the set of almost quantum correlations. So it is a set of correlations that we can prove that to be supraquantum, and we can prove that it satisfies all known information principles proposed so far, except information causality. Okay? I mean, for information causality, it's not that the problem with information causality is that we don't have a proof. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but we don't have it. And all the numerical evidence that we have suggests that it satisfies information causality too. So we have a set of correlations that is almost quantum in the sense that operationally, at the moment, we don't see any difference with quantum correlations. I mean, okay, at least based on these information principles. So what is the set of these almost quantum correlations? The definition is here. So you have these probabilities that I wrote before. So they are defined in terms of some measurements. So here you see, you sum over the result, you have measurements. These are the measurements for party K. So these are the projectors that define a measurement. When I sum over the results, I have an identity. The probability is written as the trace over a quantum state of the product of these measurements. So I'm not imposing the tensor product. But I'm imposing that the measurement operators commute when acting on this state. Okay, so this is a permutation of the measurements. So if you want, I'm not imposing that measurement by Alice commute with the measurements by Bob, but I impose the measurement by Alice times a measurement by Bob when acting on the state is the same as measurement by Bob times measurement by Alex when acting on the state. So I impose commutation only when acting on the state. Okay? And well, clearly, I mean, this set contains quantum correlations, because in quantum correlations, I have the same. I have the product of measurements acting on the state, but I impose commutation over all possible states. Okay? So while here, I'm imposing commutation only on the state I'm measuring. Okay, so the intuition why we propose this set is because if you care about correlations, somehow you are only seeing the measurements acting on a given state. So if you make principles based on these correlations, somehow you don't see the measurements acting on some other states of your theory, because you are only caring about the correlations that you see in the experiment. So you are only seeing the measurement operators acting on your state. So it appears difficult to make a difference between commutation on your state and commutation when acting on other states. Okay, so I don't know if this makes the intuition more clear, but this is why we propose this set of correlations. Okay, so we gave another definition, and I mean, this is not important now, but the nice thing is that using this definition, we could prove that this set of almost quantum correlations corresponds to one of the levels of our hierarchy. You remember we had this hierarchy that converges to the set of quantum correlations? Well, we proved that this almost quantum correlations is one of the levels of the hierarchy. This is nice because now I can use semi-definite programming to characterize this set. And then, I mean, we prove that the set is larger than the quantum set. We prove that we have this Bell inequality, and we prove that this Bell inequality gives it's lower bounded by -1 for quantum correlations, but we can violate this bound by almost quantum correlations. Okay, once you define a set of correlations, you want this set to have some non-trivial properties. So what we can see is that this set is stable under post-processing. So when you have a set of correlations, you don't want that by combining set elements from this set, you leave the set. I mean, this might seem something trivial, but it's not. So if you have boxes, you want that by combining these boxes, you have an element from this set. Okay? So what are the operations that you can do? You can make post-selection, so you can put some inputs, getting some outputs, and keep the remaining state or the remaining correlations. You can also distribute these boxes, these almost quantum correlations among different parties, or you can also wire them. So I can put an input here, get the output, put it as an input here, get the, get the output, using as an input here, get the output, put in as an input here, and so on. Okay, so I can concatenate these correlations. What I don't want is that by making these concatenations, I leave the set. Otherwise, the set of correlations would be ill-defined. Well, this property is satisfied by almost quantum, so it's a good set of correlations. And then we could prove that it satisfies all the information principles. So it has non-trivial communication complexity, satisfies local orthogonality, satisfies microscopic locality. And for information causality, we took all the papers that study information causality numerically, and we got better bounds using almost quantum correlations. So at the moment, this is the situation. So there is quantum mechanics here, quantum correlations, which is strictly smaller than this set, which is included in all these sets here. So clearly, none of these principles, perhaps information causality, is able to get quantum correlations. OK, so what are the conclusions of that? I mean, if you read my abstract, I was saying that usually I think it's interesting by several reasons. I mean, one of the reasons is that it shows that it seems difficult to get quantum correlation from information principles. The second reason is that usually to modify quantum theory is not easy. I mean, people have tried to make modifications of the theory, and you usually run into problems like signaling or increase in computational power. I mean, there is even a sentence that I like from a paper by Aronson who says that quantum theory may represent an island in theory space. Okay? Well, what we show here is that at least at the level of correlation, it seems possible to modify quantum correlation without running into any dramatic operational consequence. So there were these principles that were proposed by correlations. We can modify the structure of correlation of the theory, and we are still compatible with all these principles. OK, there is, however, an important difference between quantum and almost quantum correlations. So almost quantum correlations, as I told you, corresponds to one level of the hierarchy, and you can characterize using semi-definite programming. This is something that you can run in a classical computer, so it's simple. Now, if you care about quantum correlation, the best method we have is our hierarchy of semi-definite programming conditions. But it's not known whether deciding whether some points are quantum is decidable. So at the moment, it could be. I mean, I think it was Tobias Fritz, the first one who mentioned this to me. It's not even known whether, if you give me some correlation and you ask me whether they are quantum, whether this is decidable or not. So it could be the case that deciding whether some correlations are quantum would be wasn't decidable. So if this was the case, I mean, this could be a difference or a possible principle for choosing between quantum correlations over almost quantum correlations. Okay? So almost quantum correlations are not only decidable, but are easily decidable using semi-definite programming. It could be that quantum correlations are undecidable. But I don't know what's your preference. Do you prefer correlation in nature to be decidable or not? Well, I don't know. Okay? So this could be an important difference between these two sets. And of course, also an intriguing question is how to make a theory. I mean, this might be seen crazy, but why not to try to make a theory for almost quantum correlations? And perhaps with this theory, try to make some predictions and go to a lab and see whether we can find these correlations. I mean, why? Let's be crazy for a while and let's think, why is it possible that the world has almost quantum correlations and not quantum correlations? Okay? Why not? At the moment, I don't see any strong reason why. Well, I mean, I see a reason, because they are incompatible with quantum physics. But as I say, I don't see, from an information point of view, I don't see any strong reason why the world cannot be almost quantum. So when working on that, we talked to several people. Actually, we talked to people here at PI, like Sorkin, and we also talked to Henson. And they told us about something that I'm not an expert on that, which is the coherent history approach to quantum physics. And the motivation comes from quantum gravity. So there, some of you know more than me about this, but they define a notion of quantum measurement. And they impose a quantum sum rule. And this implies some lack of interference between a triple of histories. And then they can map this quantum measurement onto something that they call the coherence functional. And you see here they impose some positivity on a matrix. And this reminds a lot of our positivity condition of our hierarchy. Okay, so they impose that they have a matrix. I mean, I won't focus on these details, but they have a matrix which is, they impose that it's semi-definite positive. And in a recent paper, Dauker, Henson, and Walden proved that demanding this decoherence fractional to be positive is equivalent to one of the levels of our hierarchy. And in our paper, we proved that this level of the hierarchy is equivalent to almost quantum correlations. So using this a priori unrelated approach to quantum physics with a quantum gravity motivation, you obtain the same set of almost quantum correlations. So I think it's something intriguing. Well, maybe it's an accident, but it's something that is there, and I think it deserves further investigation. So maybe here, there might be a hint to construct a theory and possibly make predictions about a possible experiment testing quantum versus almost quantum correlation. I mean, this is very speculative, but I think this connection is interesting. Okay, so with this, I come to the conclusions. So for the set, for the what concerns almost quantum correlations, I think it's an interesting object. Okay? So as I told you, it has an efficient numerical characterization. This means that you can play with it. I mean, this also means that you have a principle for quantum correlations. Please test it against almost quantum correlations. And you can numerically make some tests because that's an efficient numerical characterization. And in many senses, it's not more powerful than quantum correlations. Okay, so this is what I said, and it has this connection with quantum gravity. So from a speculative point of view, I mean, perhaps it's the starting point from some physics beyond quantum physics. Well, I don't know, but I think this connection deserves investigation. And just to conclude with this, I mean, I think all this study of correlations is a very nice framework for different research areas. So, I mean, if you, this is related to the how I was introduced, okay? So in this framework of correlation of these boxes, there is a clear interplay between quantum information theory and quantum foundations. Okay, so there are questions that have a clear quantum foundation motivation, which is characterizing quantum correlations, understanding why some correlations don't seem to be possible in nature. Okay, you have reconstruction of quantum theory. And at the same time, the use of these correlations for quantum information processing. There is device-independent quantum key distribution, and also the problem that I didn't mention, how to make these things practical, how to implement these protocols. In between these concepts, for instance, you can put this information principles that have a like non-trivial communication complexity that has a quantum information motivation, but they tell you something about the correlations that are possible in quantum physics, or also the complexity aspects of quantum correlations, whether they are decidable or not. But perhaps now also we have a possible way of connecting these things with quantum gravity. I don't know, I'm not an expert. I think this is just an invitation for you to think about this, okay? So what we know now is that there is a clear connection with this decoherent functional. So this, I mean, I think people working on this problem were wondering whether this can give quantum correlations, and we know that they cannot. So it gives almost quantum correlations. But I don't know if there are other questions that can be phrased in these terms. So with this, I come to the conclusion. I just want to put a couple of advertisements. So at ICFO, we have some very high-level postdoc positions that are for any group at ICFO. So if you're interested in doing anything related to quantum information theory, but also quantum optics, many body physics, or experiments, I mean, give a look, because these are very good positions for I would say, senior postdocs, but for good postdocs. And also, if you want to hire to join my group, I'm also looking for people. So thank you for your attention.
So let's start with any questions from the students.
So I actually have two questions. The first one is, so you said you had a proof that the set of almost quantum correlations is strictly larger than the set of quantum correlations. Is that proof constructive? So do you actually have an explicit example of like probability of vectors? And in that case, is there an obvious scenario in, since the whole thing you said is motivated by quantum gravity, is there kind of like a scenario where you could reproduce these correlations in an explicit setting?
Well, okay, so, okay, let me just be more precise. I mean, proves that the set of almost quantum correlation was larger than quantum correlations, we had numerical proofs because there was evidence that, again, it's a level of our hierarchy, and we had points that were quantum and were not in this level of the hierarchy. Okay, so, I mean, what we did was we made this more analytical, so it's a constructive proof. So we have an inequality. We can prove that this inequality is lower bounded for quantum correlations, and I can give you some states and measurements that commute when acting on this state that violate this inequality. So in this sense, it's constructive. About the motivation, okay, let's say my motivation was not from a quantum gravity point of view because I know basically very little about quantum gravity. So my motivation was more on the quantum information side. So we realized that we had this set, and then we said, oh, it's almost quantum, okay? So this is why also we named it almost quantum. And then we started proving that it satisfies all information principles, and because we wanted to prove that, or at least to shed that, some doubts about this research program of getting quantum correlation from information principles. To me now, this seems a serious obstacle to get quantum correlation from information principles. Now, the reason why I find this connection with quantum gravity potentially interested is because, okay, we have this violation of this inequality for quantum correlations by almost quantum correlations. Now, I don't know what, if an experimentalist comes to me, I don't know what to tell him, okay? Well, I have this state and these measurements that commute when acting on this state, but I cannot tell him, go to the lab and prepare this state because he will prepare a quantum state and he will make quantum measurements. So to make any possible prediction, you have to make a theory for that. I mean, here I'm only dealing with a small part of the theory, which is correlations. So this is why I think it's interesting, perhaps using ideas from generalized probabilistic theories, maybe from this connection with quantum gravity. I don't know. I have no idea. I think it's interesting to try to obtain a theory that leads to almost quantum correlations, because then you may think of a possible proposal for experiment. At the moment, we are very far from that. Okay, I have a state that lives in a Hilbert space, measurements that live in this Hilbert space. These measurements commute only when acting on this Hilbert space. I will not only acting on this state, but I cannot make sense of this. Okay.
I actually have another question, if that's okay. So if you forget about almost quantum correlations for now, just look at a set of the correlations that don't violate the no signaling principle. Do you know if there's an efficient way to check whether list of probabilities action in that set?
Yeah,
because the number of constraints actually grows very quickly with the number of boxes you have, doesn't it?
Oh, okay. Well, it's linear programming, okay? But I don't know. Yeah, okay. I don't know how this scales. Well, I've never cared about it.
Thank you.
Other questions from students?
So, but then can you take like more, like deeper level of this hierarchy? And so basically those like deeper level in the hierarchy that also inside the almost quantum correlation. So, do you think any of those levels would have like another theory or meaning or this kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, okay, I think per se is an interesting question. Try to make theories for each level of the hierarchy, because in the sense there will be a theories that will converge to quantum correlations, okay? But at the moment, I don't see any strong motivation for doing so, okay? Because at the moment, I don't see any operational difference between almost quantum and quantum. So I would prefer to be in the place where the gap can be larger. Okay. So I think it's interesting, but I tend to have a preference for this almost quantum set because at the moment that we know is the largest set of correlations that does not violate any of the proposed information principles. And in this sense, it's the set where you can expect a bigger gap between quantum and these supra quantum correlations without running into any dramatic operational contradiction.
Okay, general questions.
Thanks very much. So there've been sort of two programs looking at sort of this general probabilistic theory. So one has been inspired by the PR, the Popescu Rulic boxes, and it's been you could characterize the program as you take some information principle, apply it to that specific kind of situation, and see if you can reproduce quantum theory for that situation. And then there's been another kind of program which is trying to reconstruct quantum theory, where typically you take four or five principles, and you try to reconstruct quantum theory for all situations, not just for where you have spatially space-like separated boxes, let's say, but for general circuits. So it sort of raises the question of which is the better approach? Is it better to choose more principles and try and get all of quantum theory, or is it better to just try one principle and try and get some small part of quantum theory? I mean, my preference obviously is for the taking more principles and trying to get all of quantum theory. But even so, one question one could ask is, well, maybe you should take not just one of those principles, not just one principle, but two or three principles, and see then if you can break the stalemate you pointed out in your talk.
Okay. Shall I ask? Okay, so, well, let's say I used to work in the, say, correlation scenario. I would say the main reason being that I like the fact that in this scenario, you can say things on foundations, but also make protocols, let's say. So it's this nice combination. I think this is why I like this scenario, because you can, I mean, I'm not saying that it's better or not, but personally, I like to work on that because I can say I can obtain results that I find might be of interest for foundations, but also I can exploit these to make protocols. Okay, this is the reason why I like this correlation, because you have this black box approach and you don't have to make assumptions, and you have this device-independent flavor, and this is the main reason why I work on that, but of course I find the other approach very interesting and completely valid, and it gives you more, because it gives you not only correlation, but it gives you the whole theory. So probably if you want to make a theory for almost quantum correlation, you will have to go into that approach. I think also from what it refers to the combination of principles, I still think that in the correlation scenario, if you want to single out quantum correlations only, even if you combine different principles stated in terms of correlations, I think almost quantum correlations is something difficult to beat, okay? Because again, what I say is that, well, this is just an intuition and a hand-waving argument, but correlations are defined as the operators acting on a given state, okay? While quantum correlations, the operators you commute, which means commute acting on all possible states. But I don't know how you are going to see this difference if you only make statements about correlations. Of course, it might be possible because we have some Bell inequalities, which is a statement about correlations that show a gap between the two sets, okay? But I don't know if this will give any, operationally meaningful difference between the two sets.
But in the approaches to reconstructing quantum theory work in the sort of general probabilities framework, where you just have basically lists of probabilities. List of probabilities in the context of correlation situations are list of correlation probabilities, but in the general context, they're just lists of probabilities. And so there you have a set of principles that apply to these kinds of mathematical objects that do give you all of quantum theory.
I know. Well, I think if you want to make a theory for almost quantum, this is the way you have to proceed. Yes, this is, well, at least this is a possible way of.
So I have a question about the device independent quantum key distribution. And in particular, how much higher is the overhead in terms of the key that you first need to sacrifice to check that your boxes actually do what you want and not what the adversary wants them to do? If you compare this to the privacy amplification that one kind of needs in the quantum schemes for QKD.
Okay, so Well, I haven't studied this question carefully, okay, but I don't expect any significant overhead with compared to, I mean, what you do some of the structure of the protocol is similar in the two cases, okay? So in the case of standard device-dependent BB84 type protocols, you also make this correlation estimation, but you, I mean, to the labels, you associate more structure, like measurement and things like this, but, I mean, you also estimate a cuber, an error rate, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is, again, a frequency, in the same way as you estimate here a Bell inequality violation, okay? So from this cuber, so basically the structure of a standard protocol like BB84, you buy the boxes from the provider, you make a choice of bases, no? I mean, the coding in X and Z for the preparation and measurement. You do it many times, and you sacrifice a part of a fraction of them to estimate a parameter, which may be the error rate, okay? Now the theory tells you, from this error rate, the knowledge that Eve has on the remaining symbol is equal to something, okay? And this is the number you use for the private simplification. In device-independent QKD, say it's the same, okay? So you buy these boxes, you test them, you compute a different number, which is the Bell inequality violation. So statistically, I don't expect any difference between computing a Bell inequality violation, which is a single number made of the frequencies you see, or the error rate, which is, again, a single number. And now the theory tells you, okay, if you have this Bell inequality violation, the information that an eavesdropper may have is at most this number. And this tells you the amount of private simplification that you have to perform. So again, I haven't studied this problem with detail, but I mean, from the point of view of implementation, I don't expect any significant difference. Of course, I expect a difference because in one case, you need a Bell inequality violation at the distance. This is technologically much more demanding. But if the conditions for security are met, I don't expect any difference from the point of view of the statistics you have to collect and the amount of privacy simplification you have to perform.
Thanks.
So I have a question. I haven't quite absorbed exactly how to think about the almost quantum correlations, but it seems to me they have the following, what you might say is deficiency relative to the quantum ones, that in quantum mechanics, if I ask, how should I represent two measurements that are space-like separated? I can answer that question just by reference to the representation of those measurements. I would say, well, their observables have to commute, and I don't have to make any reference to the preparation procedure. And that seems to me like quite natural, that sort of it should be regardless of the preparation procedure, I can tell you the constraints that are implied by space-like separation. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me that in the definition of almost quantum correlations, the space-like separated measurements are modeled by these operators that have a certain property, and it depends on which preparation procedure was used. So do you agree that that's something that seems to be less elegant about the almost quantum correlations?
Yes, I mean, of course, I mean, well, one of the problems of thinking about any possible implementation or any consistency of the theory is that the definition we give is in terms of Hilbert spaces. And if you want your measurements to be independent of preparations in terms of Hilbert spaces, they have to be commuting. But this is a fact, I would say. I cannot say anything against that. I mean, the definition we have, the possible measurements depend on the state. I mean, any notion of locality depends on the state. But of course, I mean, I would say that if you want to find an explanation for these supraquantum sets in terms of Hilbert spaces, you know that you will have to run into one of these problems, okay? Because, I mean, if you want your set of correlation to be describable in terms of Hilbert spaces and you want your measurements to have a well-defined notion of locality, well, this is quantum correlations. Well, I see your point, but I think the problem comes also from the fact that the definition we give is in terms of two objects that are two quantum. So this is why you have to find another theory, perhaps this consistent history approach where there are no Hilbert spaces, and hope that there you will have another notion of state, or generalized probability theories. You will have another notion of state, another notion of dynamics. You will have another notion of measurement. This measurement will have why not? I mean, okay. So I guess this is in the spirit of these superquantum correlations. Try to find a motivation for the correlations that is not related to Hilbert space language. Of course, if I try to explain almost quantum correlation with Hilbert spaces, I run into contradictions, as I fully agree with you.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions?
I think Marco has a question here.
Nope.
So you showed us this hierarchy that converges to quantum, and I was wondering, so I'm going to cast the question maybe in two ways. One is, do you know how fast that convergence is? Because you mentioned at a certain point that we have this maybe abstract version of the problem where we have the exact probabilities, but we will never have those in real life, right? So we always have a finite amount of data. So probably can you, at a certain point in your hierarchy, say that you're gonna be compatible with quantum mechanics? And the other way of maybe looking at this same question is there anything developed along these lines, but in according to this other trend in quantum information processing that is like the one-shot scenario, where you, instead of looking of studying these probabilities, you look only at frequencies and you think of whether they are compatible with quantum theory or not.
Okay, so I'm not aware of any bound on convergence of the hierarchy. So I don't know if Tobias knows more about this, but I think Miguel, okay, I'm not sure. If I remember well, Miguel had a proof that you cannot obtain bounds on the convergence. Okay, so that satisfying a given, that in general it's not possible to say, okay, I satisfy this step in the hierarchy, so I have to be that close to quantum correlation. But I'm not sure. So it could be, you should ask Miguel when you see him, that Miguel has some proof that it's not possible to, from the level of the hierarchy that you pass, to get some bounds on how close you are to the quantum set or anything like this. In any case, I'm not aware of any bound like this. And the second question was, I think this is an interesting question, but I don't know anything about it.
Actually, just to follow up this question, if you had a bound on a convergence, couldn't you basically use it to decide whether or not something is in quantum correlations? So you mentioned that this problem, it's not known what it's decidable, but if you had a bound on the rate of on the convergence, then surely you could just use that to decide that question.
Okay, it's not, I have to think more about it, I don't know, yes.
Okay, well, let me, just before we thank Antonio again, let me remind you that there's high tea in the bistro starting now where we can ask Antonio more questions. So let's thank the speaker one more time.